We're walking down the street, and we come around a corner, and I just see a giant sign that says tattoo.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, let's get tattoos. And so my buddy who was there pulls out his phone and is like, I got the perfect one. And it's like a steam kettle anchor for us being steamers. So we go in, and by the way, we are faced. Mm-hmm. It is the afternoon. It's like maybe 12 in the afternoon. We go in and we convince them we're not that drunk. There's five of us. My one buddy, they tell him he's too drunk, can't do it. The other three of us, we all get the tattoo. Our other buddy is so shit-faced that he goes to the bathroom to throw up, ends up puking on the whole entire bathroom, then escapes out the back door, and we lose him for like 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
And he's the one that drove us.
Welcome to Rise Above. I'm Kevin Lanning, your host. Today, we're joined by Josh, a resilient Navy veteran and single father, sharing a life story of courage and inspiration. With my co-host, Kayla Harrison, we explore Josh's journey through near-death experiences, parenthood complexities, and finding hope in the darkest moments. Let's dive in. Josh, welcome to Rise Above.
Hey, once again.
Welcome.
Thank you all so much for having me.
Y'all.
So,
let's do this again.
All right.
Where are you from with that southern-ass accent?
Okay. Yeah.
Give us a scoop.
All right, so from a little place called Douglasville, Georgia, like it says, about 20, 30 minutes west of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, if this is Atlanta, this is Alabama line, we're kind of like about right here. Nothing special. I mean, it's blown up a little bit over the years, just like anywhere, mainly because there's so many people moving to Atlanta, and then you have so many people getting out of Atlanta, and then they just keep expanding more and more. So anything outside of Atlanta that used to be nice little quiet little country town, it's rough.
So did you grow up, when you say in a country town, is it like a suburb, or did you grow up like literally on a farm?
Tell me
what the vibe was. Like your parents, what was it like?
No, it's funny because I always, like, anywhere I go, and I've like, even being in the military and all that and traveling everywhere, everyone, as soon as I say, you know, first three words is like, how y'all doing, or how you doing?
Anything. No, I literally picture you in overalls.
Yeah,
shoveling horse shit.
That's literally
pitchfork.
That's literally the first thing anybody says. Everybody's like, how many horses and how many cows did you have? And I'm like,
how many acres did you grow up on?
I'm like, I wish that you could meet people from my hometown, because like when I talk to them, I literally have to look at my dad and go, what the fuck did he just say? I'm like, I have no idea what that person just said.
What percentage of your high school graduating class stayed home?
Oh my
and
God.
And never left.
So many.
Really?
So many.
Wow.
Like,
that's the same for mine.
So like we had this conversation, and I feel so there was so many people who, like, I think it was like their grandparents, like, all went to the same school,
mm-hmm.
all had kids at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids grew up, all went to the same high school.
All had kids
same time.
Yeah.
Then their kids who I went to high school with all grew up together,
all
had kids at the same time, and they still never left. And, like, I get that. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've been away from family for so long that it would be great to be around family again, you know, but I just feel like that's not living to me. Like, I feel like, you know, especially when you're, like, 20s, like, get out there, go experience the world, do something besides, like, just stay. You're just stuck.
There's just so much the world has to offer.
So
like,
much.
It's so big.
There's so much to do. There's so many more people to
Even if you just,
meet.
Like, even if you just traveled the United States,
that's
I feel
it.
Like.
Yeah. You don't have to go overseas. Like,
no.
Just,
I mean,
I don't know.
It's great. I think it's such a good education. But
yeah. I don't know. Get out of Georgia.
right. So your family all still lives there?
Yeah. Everybody still lives there.
And you're not close, or you are close with your family?
I'm pretty close. Really, really close with my dad. A lot of my family, and like we can get more into that, like most have passed. Some I don't even talk to anymore. Still stay in touch with my mom, my little sister, and then my dad. So, but they're also there. My parents, they live like 12, 15 minutes away from one another. But they're still in the same house. Like, my dad's still in the same house we were in when I was three.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's cool.
Yep.
So your parents split up?
Yeah, they divorced when I was six.
When you were six?
Mm-hmm.
And you said you have one sister?
I've got a half sister on my mama's side. And two stepbrothers on my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a older brother who we were actually having this discussion earlier. I haven't talked to him in many years. I haven't seen him in 10 years this month. And then I've got stepsister on my dad's side.
Okay.
So family's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what That's what family is. That's family, though. That's how it works.
That's exactly
there's
how it
no
works.
Such thing as a perfect, ideal family anymore.
I know, like, maybe two or three friends whose parents are still together
yeah.
after all this time.
Yeah.
But even when you talk to them, they're still like, it's family. Everybody still fights, argues. Yeah. And it's like, nothing's perfect.
Yeah, totally.
But you're like, oh, I can't believe, oh, you're not divorced? You don't come from a divorce home?
No, I know.
Home?
It's like more surprising. I know.
Yeah.
I always find that interesting. I guess I'm kind of like doing a little experiment with our guests mm-hmm. because I like to see, like, everyone who comes on here has a story, right? Mm-hmm. And how they've risen above what has happened to them. But I kind of like to go back to the beginning
yeah.
and see if there's like a, can you pinpoint where it started?
The family dynamic.
Right.
And what was that like?
Of course, the family is such a huge part of all of our lives when we're children mm-hmm. because that's where we learn how to be. That's
exactly.
where we learn everything from.
Oh, yeah.
What was it like at 6 years old? Obviously, you said your parents divorced.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like growing up in two households, going back and forth? Were you more so with your mother? Were you more so with your father?
Yeah, I mean, it's never something easy because, you know, luckily they were, you know, close by. They lived close to each other. So it was like 50-50. So I did from 6 until I was 15, I did 2 weeks with my mom, 2 weeks with my dad, and just back and forth doing that.
That's got to be tough, though.
Yeah, because as soon as you start to get, like, you know, comfortable at one home, then it's like, all right, pack up, gotta go, and then you go to the next, and then you're there, and then you're, all right, I'm getting used to this, all right, pack up, go back and forth.
And I'm sure they had different rules and, like, different ways to do things.
Yeah, it was different rules, and then, you know, my mom was just, I love my mom to death,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, she just, it sucks because she just, like, ran my dad down the road, just always just trash my dad, you know, saying all these things, had this narrative for so many years, and even to this day, like, I'm about to be 33 and she still has the same narrative that she had when I was 6 about my father. And one of the biggest things I hold dear to myself and I admire my father the absolute most for is my dad never, ever, even to this day, has never badmouthed my mom.
Wow.
Never said a word.
That's huge.
No, that's...
And he just always, anytime, you know, my mom would drive me nuts or something was going on or anything, saying all this, my dad would just be like, well, you know, it's your mama.
That's a strong man.
He's like, I don't know what to tell you. It's just your mama. The only mama you got. Mm-hmm. So
Papa Norton, good job.
Yeah. I know. Seriously.
If you're listening,
I'm like, I want to
good
meet him.
You've met Papa Norton.
Your dad is a savage.
Yeah.
He is
yeah.
old school.
Super old school.
Very yeah.
old southern. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good yeah. very good dude.
Yeah.
Solid. I don't make him like that anymore. It's tough to find an old southern gentleman like that.
Yeah.
I respect that a lot. Listen.
No, that's hard.
Your mother,
it's
I'm
so
sure,
hard.
Is a wonderful, wonderful lady.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
sometimes some people just don't know how to express certain feelings or,
mm-hmm.
You know, you don't raise, you know, raising a child, especially going through a divorce like that with you, that was her first time experiencing that.
Oh,
it's not like it was something that she had experience with already.
Right.
And, you know, that's hard. It's hard because sometimes, listen, I'm divorced. In the beginning, it was a very resentful process.
Oh,
and I was in fear, like, maybe my daughter might like her mother more than she likes me or want to spend time with her mother versus spending time with me. So some people sometimes just don't know how to express that.
Yeah.
And, you know, but they did the best that they could.
Oh, of course.
That's the hard thing about being, like, as I became a parent, I finally realized that my parents were humans and, like, they were young humans doing the best they could.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, like, nobody has any fucking clue what they're doing as a parent.
None
of us.
You realize they were our age now doing this shit.
Yeah.
And you think, like, they got everything figured out and all this.
No, I thought they were, like, these, like, all-knowing beings. And I'm like, I have no fucking clue what's going on.
Exactly. And you realize, holy shit, I'm their age now.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm going through a nasty divorce. So, like, that's how me and him, like, really hit it off and became friends. It's going through the same thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
I don't, like, fuck, I'm just day by day. Just take it day by day.
It gives me a lot of, it helps me find grace for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now that I am a parent, I can be like, oh, okay, like, you really did do the best you could.
You see exactly, you know, the things that they did do or the things they had to do. You're like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
There's one thing that I do want to bring up, though, and this is something that I want our listeners to take note of. If they're a single parent, even if they're still with their significant other, something I really respect about you. This weekend, he drove, 24 hours in total just to get your daughter for the weekend?
Yeah, so.
And spend 3 days with her?
Yeah, so right now with how this is set up is they refuse to meet me halfway, so I have to drive from Jupiter to Jacksonville. So it's 1,000 miles a month. And so I pick her up Thursday, and I have to drop her off Monday. So out of the 4 days I get her, 24 hours is me in the car.
You are a dedicated father.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
That's what I respect about him. Yeah. He's a dedicated father. He shows up for his daughter, and there aren't, unfortunately...
A lot of parents don't.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of parents like that.
Well, that's the one thing to talk about that, too, is like I like to hit on is there's so many, and it goes both ways, right? I'm not just going to sit here and like trash women or anything like that. They're shitty people. In the world, they're shitty moms, they're shitty dads.
Mm-hmm.
And what sucks is like there's so many bad dads out there who don't want nothing to do with their kid, right? And the moms will do anything to give them the kid, to let them see their kid, and they don't want shit to do with them. Then you have good dads out there who are trying everything they can to get their child, and the mother is like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Spiteful,
not
holding
happening.
On to that hurt.
I am going to use this child as a weapon and a pawn, and I'm going to torment you until she is 18.
Well, okay. I'm just going to say something. I want to. So, my dad was a very absent father, and I grew up a block away from him, like literally a block away, and I almost never saw him. So, I want you to know. And that played a really big role in my life and growing up and the choices I made and the men I was attracted to, the relationships I fell into. And so I just want you to know, like, you're doing the right thing. Like, a father, a parent who never gives up on their child, a parent who's always there no matter what, no matter how hard it is, like, that's the purest form of love. And, like, I'm going to cry. You're like, you're doing the right thing. You're a badass.
Nah,
like,
appreciate it.
I already am like, okay, well, all right. What else do you want to talk about? Yeah. The floor is yours. Tell me everything.
Oh, man.
No, but that's the thing. Like, that's the whole point of, I brought this up last episode, why we did this.
Mm-hmm.
We want to, people in there, listen, I'm going to spoil a little bit, but you were in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
You were on a nuclear submarine.
Yep.
And what would you do, like 3 months at the bottom of like the Pacific or something
no,
like that? Like how long?
So it was,
me the scoop here. Right, yeah.
So we were a little bit different. So I was forward deployed out of Guam. And the way the rotation works for us, so you have people like on the East Coast and West Coast of the, you know, continental United States. And those guys will go for like a nine-month deployment. Sometimes you get extended, then, you know, they're doing that. But they're also like going port to port to port. For us, because we were forward deployed out of Guam and we were the closest to that side of the world, we would be like 2 weeks out at sea, 3 weeks in, a week out at sea, a week in, a month out at sea, 3 weeks in. And it was just, you literally live by your phone.
Mm.
So there was no consistency to anything. It was like, there's days we would work, you know, a 20-hour shift. You get home at like, you'd walk through the door at like 8:30 at night. And then by 8:35, you get a phone call, pack your sea bag, we're going out to sea for the next 2 months.
Holy
and you're like,
cow.
I haven't even sat on my couch yet. And they're like, don't give a fuck.
Wow.
Pack your shit. We're leaving at 5 a.m. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Okay, wait. So back it up.
I just jumped, sorry.
I know. Okay, so 6 to 15, you're going between parents. And then 15 hits. I mean, like, did you enlist, like, at 18? Like, how did you get into the military? So tell me a little bit.
Yeah.
Back it up a little more.
Okay, we can go back to that. So from 6 to 15, six to 15, so I was going back and forth. And then, again, let me reiterate, I love my mama.
Mm-hmm.
But my mama has she's an alcoholic. She's got a really bad drinking problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something we've, you know, struggled with for many, many years. And so she threw me out of the house when I was 15. And so, you know, for years, and to go back talking about good parents, bad parents, not saying my mom's a bad parent, you know, going through it, she's young. You know, I hear all these horrible things for so many years about my dad. He's this, he's that, you know. And then so when she threw me out, my dad was just like, all right, doors are open. Come move in. I was like, okay. So I move in, and then, you know, this kind of hit back what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Wanted to talk to you about, Kevin, is, you know, you hear all these things, and then when I move in, I'm like there for a little bit, like 6 months. I'm like, dad's not any of these things that I've been told my whole life.
Mm.
Like, he's literally none of these things that I've been basically like programmed to believe the majority of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to go back with bad, you know, bad parents is like I said, what I admire about my father the most is not bad mouthing my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you don't, I feel like that's just like absolute child abuse to sit there and just bad mouth the other parent to make yourself look better, or to just build this like narrative that you have created in your own mind of like, I'm winning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just basically turn this small child into thinking a certain way for my own benefit.
Right. About the person who helped create them.
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, I mean, it took years to figure that out. And then you realize, oh, okay, none of that was true.
Mm.
So with kids, you know, if your kid is being told that by the other parent or whatever, you know, over time, one thing my dad's always told me, and that's what's helped me right now with going through my divorce, is time goes on, people get older, kids grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, that's
the
life.
The truth eventually comes out.
The truth comes out. Mm-hmm. Kids will figure it out for themselves. And it sucks right now, you know, because you know you're going through that, or if there's people out there, you know, listening, going through that with me, you know, I'm included going through that. You know, it'll get better over time. And that's something I have to tell myself a lot. And I reference my dad a lot, because like he's literally who I go to and seek advice for. And I really don't know anybody else truly that can like calm me down or just give me the best advice, because he's just been through it all. And he's, you know, he just has the best words of wisdom ever. Mm. And you just listen, and I have to take it back and think about it for a few days. And I'm like, all right, this, you know, when times get rough and times get down, I just think of the certain things that he says. And I'm like, all right, it's going to be all right. It's going to be better.
Mm.
It just takes time.
Mm.
There's no better knowledge than life experience.
Yeah.
100%.
Right.
Wise, older.
Yeah.
Just been there, been through
done it. Yeah.
We always talk about like how important it is to have a mentor or have someone who is kind of like been on a journey and that you're on or whatever. Just like someone who can help be a guide. Like, and how lucky, I mean, that's what a blessing that it's your father.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing.
And what's aggravating about it too, though, is
that it's your father.
One, it's your dad, and you never want to hear shit your parents have to say.
Right?
You're like, you don't fucking know what you're talking about.
I know.
But when I say, and if he hears this, he knows I'm admitting it.
Oh, he's definitely going to hear it.
He has never been wrong about anything I have done in my life.
He's shaking his head right
now. When I say,
he's like, oh yeah,
every fucking thing he has said has always been true.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I fight him tooth and nail, I'm like, you don't know what you're fucking talking about. In the end, I'm like, fuck, he was right again.
Really?
Every
single... Like, okay,
single...
give me an example.
All right, for example, like, growing up, you know, and this is probably like a stupid example.
That's okay,
but
come on.
Growing up, you're like, you know, friends are life, right?
Mm-hmm,
so I remember in high school, it was like, friends are life, friends are everything. Like, they meant more to me than anything in the world. It's like, oh my God, I've known them since I was 12. Like, we're going to fucking be friends forever, da da da. Dude, the moment I got orders and got shipped overseas, all these motherfuckers cut me off.
No.
None of them talked to me anymore. I would reach out to them constantly through phone calls, Facebook, because it's like, I think before Instagram and all that. Dude, Messenger, all this, and all I'd get excuse was like, oh, well, we don't know what time it is over there. I'm like, motherfucker, a message doesn't give a
you
shit what time it is.
You don't need a
you
time
can fucking
to
respond
send it. I'll
whenever
open
you
it
want.
When I open it.
Yeah, and then like, and he always told me, he was like, son, you ain't got no damn friends. He's like, you got acquaintances.
Oh my God,
he's
he
like,
said that? He knew.
He told me this shit when I was like 15, 16 years old. He was like, son, when you get my age and when you get older, he's like, you will be able to count maybe on one hand how many true friends you have.
Mm.
And to this, and now
damn,
I can count on one hand how many people I can literally call up right now who would stop everything they're doing to give me the shirt off their back and give me a home and do things for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it took years of fighting him on that, not wanting to believe it. And then that shit hit home. And I was like, damn, right about that.
Dad was right.
Dad was right. Mm. Yeah. That, and then like the military, you know, I didn't want to do subs at first. And he's like, I was like, I want to quit this. I want to go do something else. Da-da. And he's like, I'm begging you, don't quit. It's going to work out. It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Sure shit, I did that. And then, you know, yeah, it sucked. And we can dive more into submarine life if you want. But, you know, it was great. And to this day, I think it was a blessing because the brothers I made in there, I still keep in touch with this day. And they've done more for me than... I can't wait to be able to return the favor to them one day because they've just been above and beyond for me.
Dude, shout out Heath Jordan.
Dude, Heath Jordan and Dylan Adams.
So...
These guys know, again, you guys know each other.
Well,
I'll
break it down. Yeah. Okay. So when I met Josh, we lived in the same complex. I was with my brother. My brother was visiting for the weekend. Mm-hmm. Josh had his daughter. I had my daughter. Instantly, they're the same age. So him and I start talking. And his buddy that also lived in the complex, Heath.
Yeah, we lived together.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Josh... you know, I'm telling your story, but
you
went
man.
Back up to Jacksonville to rekindle things with your
ex-wife.
Daughter's mother, ex-wife, and he went with you. He backed you. He supported.
Yeah.
He was there mentally for you, and he even moved to West Palm to be together with you.
Got him to leave Texas to move out here and to move in with me, and so we lived together for about a year. And then after that, you know, we both were planning to go back to Jack so I could be closer to my daughter. And like I said, you know, me and my ex are going through like a year and a half, almost 2 year divorce. And then, you know, she ended up persuading me to come back in and like, let's fix this, da 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 da. And that turned out to be a complete total shit show. But, you know, moved back. And then he moved up there with some old Navy friends and was living there. And then now he's, you know, he's trying to finish up firefighter school right now. So he's still up there.
Heath, you were in the Navy with?
Yeah, so my buddy Heath, we were on submarines together. My buddy Dylan, I live with right now, we were both on submarines together. So it's kind of funny.
Like a tight bond.
This camaraderie, I'm like jealous of it. I have friends, but like you, I don't know. Like,
no, we just always stayed
Heath
in touch.
I mean, I'm and sure Dylan, like serving they're... and like putting your life.
Yeah, being on.
It's like a different kind of.
Well, I told him, it was funny. I was like, it's like being on the sub and you're stuck in a fucking steel tube for, you know, 4 years.
Yeah.
And then you just build this relationship of brotherhood and camaraderie with these guys. It's just, you just go through years of literally just eating a bag of dicks together. So like that bond is just, I can't explain. I mean, it's like anybody, most people in the military, I mean, you know, it's not just Navy and subs like I'm talking about. There's so many other branches and guys that like actually do combat and are in the shit and done way more than we ever have. But us more is like, to me, I mean, you're volunteering to go into an underwater prison. So it's psychological. So you just have to be mentally tough to, I mean, your mental game has to be strong to do that. It's not so much physical. It's just all mental. So
how many were there of you on a submarine?
So without any riders and stuff like that, I think it was the regular crew is like 140 to 150.
How many females?
Zero. Yeah.
They can't?
No,
or
no.
They just don't?
So when I was in... So I got out of active duty in 2016. So January of 2016, the Navy implemented having female enlisted go on submarines. Nothing against women. I think it's the stupidest fucking decision ever. Because you put a bunch of dudes in a steel tube. It's already hard as shit.
Yeah.
With birthing, using that bathroom, trying to figure out how to live. Everybody's at each other's throats. Because you go... 30 plus days with no sunlight, you're doing the same thing at the same time with the same people every fucking day over and over. So tensions get high, and then now you're like, let's throw women in the mix. And I don't know about you, but there's plenty of examples after this happened of what do you think happens if you put men and women together and shove them in a steel tube and put them hundreds of feet underwater for months on end.
Yeah, there's pretty much only one thing I can think
of. Yeah, that one thing you can think of. Yeah.
And then the ugly ones start looking hot.
Bro, me and Dylan.
Shame on you. Bro. Oh, my God.
Bro, me and Dylan. Yeah, me and Dylan were in a locked room, right? We were radio men, so we were in a... well, it's called a skiff. So we were in a locked room together. Let me tell you. So after like 60 days of being in a locked room with him, fucking 8 hours a day, he started looking good.
like a real pretty woman, pretty man.
I love that. I love that. Before I jump into more of the Navy questions, I'm sure Kayla's going to want you to go back a little into how you got into the Navy.
Yeah, oh, I want to know, like, So you turn 15, your mom kicks you out, you start, you move in with your dad, he's waiting there for you with arms wide open, you start to develop a deeper relationship with him.
Yeah, like super, super close with him.
That's awesome. And then, yeah, so like what happened? How did you get into the military? What happened? Tell me.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say I went to college. I was enrolled in college. And so my older brother went to a college in Tennessee, and because of him, like, you know, I idolized him as a kid, and so I was like, all
was
right.
Was he with your dad at the same time?
Like, no, he lived with his mom the whole time. We rarely saw him, but he was going to college up in
Tennessee. How much older than you?
He's like 3.5 years older than me. And so he went to this college in Tennessee, so I was like, okay, I got to go where he goes. And so I went there. I did like a year and a half. Fucked around because I was an idiot.
You know what you wanted to study?
I wasn't fucking majoring in shit.
You weren't studying.
I literally was there just to fucking party and be there because I was dumb. I was 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, away from my family in another state. I'm just like, I'm out of my mind. I'm going to do whatever I want. And, you know, hanging around the wrong crowds and just doing dumb 18-year-old shit.
Normal
shit.
It's very normal.
So, you know, I was just trying to get, you know, core classes done. Half of them I wasn't even fucking going to because I was just fucking smoking weed all the time. and then one day, I'm sitting on the couch and there's a knock on my door and I open the door and it's my dad.
Oh, shit.
And he goes, get your shit, put it in the truck, and you're going the fuck home. And I was like, God damn it.
He's right again.
So come to find out, he figured out what my GPA was, the fact that I had not been going to class, and then I had like a million parking tickets because I was just, you know, I didn't pay for
being
shit.
Being an 18-year-old kid. Yeah.
So he's like, pack your shit and go. And I was like, okay, well, I already had my mind made up at the time. Like, regardless if I graduated or not, I was going to join the military. And so as soon as he was like, all right, he was like, so I'm going to give you till the summer to work with me. And if you don't figure out what the fuck you're doing with your life, he's like, you're getting the fuck out of my house. And I was like, okay. And
tough love.
And that's honestly the best advice or best thing he could have ever done to me because I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go join the military. And I immediately went back to Tennessee, went to the recruiter, and I always wanted to do like Army or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he begged and pleaded, like, please just go talk to the Navy. Go talk to the Navy. And
really?
I was just like, dude.
It was your dad's call?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't want to fucking talk to the Navy. I was like, I want to go shoot shit and do cool stuff. And then I went, and of course, that day, every recruiter was closed but the Navy. And I was like, damn it. I was like, this might be a sign. So I go in there and start talking to him, and then sure as shit, like a couple months, like a month later, I signed an 8-year contract, went submarines.
Jesus.
And then...
8-year contract.
You're 18, and you signed an 8-year contract.
I was 19.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
No, 19?
Yeah,
you're
big difference.
You're so mature.
Yeah. Anyway. No, but I turned 20 right before I went. So I went to boot camp in June of 11 and turned 20 in April. And, but yeah, when I went to boot camp, I was like the old man there at 20 because like 80, I think it was, we had 90 guys. I think 80% of them were 17 and their parents signed off on them to go.
Holy
shit. So I was in there with literal children.
Wow.
Even though I was still a child.
Yeah,
but
obviously. Yeah.
17-year-olds act like
even
fucking,
more of a child.
Oh my God.
At 17.
That's wild.
Ridiculous.
Really quick, I want to pause there for one sec. I want to go back because we were talking about this in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad giving you that ultimatum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad. Yes.
Do something or get the F out.
Yeah, and so
that's tough love. We were talking about that. So our
being
last,
an enabler, like what a gift that is.
I was just about to say that.
Not
so
being
what we were talking about on the way down
enabler.
Here,
exactly.
And not enabling, which there's so many people who enable their children, and that's why so many people never correct any of their faults or grow as a human being is because their parents are just constantly enabling. And I know so many people who have done that, and that. There's people, you know, in their 30s plus who are still the same like they were in fucking, I don't know, junior year of high school.
Right. No emotional growth.
None.
No, like, self-awareness.
None.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
no, that's a gift. No, that's a gift. I'm sure you probably were pissed at him at the time, but, like, him saying that. I mean, imagine if he had not come and got you.
It was the best
thing
ever.
And you had just, like, kept fucking off.
Yeah.
Like.
It was the best.
You know how that story ends a lot of times, you know?
100%. I truly believe that was like the best thing he could have ever done for me was literally putting me in my place and being like, you need to grow the fuck up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, enough of all this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. And so, like, I quit doing drugs. I quit partying. I mean, well, we still drank, you know, before I went to boot camp.
Yeah, because
I have my buddies I'd still go see.
Of course.
And they're like, every weekend was like, oh, dude, it's Norton's last weekend. And that went on for like 5 fucking months.
So. Yeah.
But no, all the other shit, you know, completely, you know, quit doing drugs, quit smoking, quit all that.
Mm-hmm.
Got my shit together and then went off to boot camp and then, you know, got shipped overseas. Well, I was in Connecticut for a year for submarine school. And after mm-hmm. that, got shipped to Guam.
What was boot camp like?
Oh, it was a joke.
It was a joke?
Fucking joke, dude.
Really?
Yeah, Navy boot camp. Yeah.
What do you mean? What did you have to do? Tell me. I want to know.
All right. Sorry, Navy. But anyway.
I mean, well, look at this guy. He's like 6'4".
He's like, everything's a joke to me. I could go run a marathon right now.
No. I can do it. No, not at all. I'm just saying, like, in comparison to, like, other branches, like, where they actually have to, like, work out constantly.
Got it.
Get their shit pushed in.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Us.
You said it's more mental than physical. You did say
there's
that
a lot
at
more
the beginning.
Mental, yeah.
But
it's just more structure. Like it was so much structure, right? It was just trying to then break you from your fucking habits and your bullshit ways prior, like, mm-hmm. before getting in,
mm-hmm.
and they just break you of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's mental. Yeah, you do have some physical, but in no shape, form, or fashion would I ever sit here and be like, "Yeah, Navy boot camp was so much harder than the Marines, or so much harder than the Army."
Mm-hmm.
Nah, no way. can't do it.
Yeah.
But no, it was good. And then after that, you know, submarine school up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to do, like, we were there for about a year. It was like right out a year of school.
Was that intense? Like, is submarine school like you, like?
It was just more of just like tests and, you know, learning. There was like a bunch of different jobs. There was like 4 different schooling, like basic enlisted submarine school. And mm-hmm. then we had like our, it's like 2 little technical schools you
mm-hmm,
do,
mm-hmm.
which I fucking hated because, dude, I am an idiot when it comes to computers and all that. And they're like, yeah, this is a full.
Why do you think he's right
dude,
there?
I'm literally looking at this.
No.
I don't.
Stay in shape.
This is literally black magic.
You see
to me.
My
I don't
notebook?
Know.
I'm like, I take notes.
Yeah. I have no idea what's going on over here.
Yeah, me neither.
So we did that. And then you'd go to your A school, which is like where you learn your job. And then mm-hmm. after that, you get orders. And it was great because, like, it was funny because we had based off, like, who does the highest, like, usually, like, the top 3 people in the class get to choose their, where, you know, their station. They get to, because there's, like, a billet of how many places, like, you get ex San Diego's, ex, you know, Kings Bay, Georgia, out in Bangor, Washington, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. not many places in the U.S. for submarines to go. There's
mm-hmm.
only a few.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, every dude wants San Diego. Everybody's like, take me to San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, they bring me and 2 other guys in. They're like, hey, good news, you guys get orders first. And we're like, all right, sweet, where are we going? And they're like, you're going to Guam. And I literally, the other 2 guys, I guess they knew, my buddies, they knew where Guam was. I have never heard of Guam in my life.
Yeah.
And I remember as soon as they told us that, they're sitting in their office and I just look up and I go, what the fuck is a Guam? And the guy just goes, it's a tiny island about 10,000 miles away from here. He goes,
right.
Good luck.
It's in, like, the Oceania, right? Like, by New Zealand,
it's
Australia.
It's in the Marianas Trench. It's like, I think it's 1,500 miles south of Japan. So
okay. Oh, yeah.
It's like 11 miles wide and I think like 31 miles long.
Yeah.
So
the only reason I know Guam exists is because they had a judo player in the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
So that's literally the only reason.
Yeah.
Nice.
He was a heavyweight. I don't know if that means, I don't know if there are heavier people there, but...
Yes.
You would have one to ask me.
Yes.
So what was your job in the, like, on, like, what you said you got, like, your,
so I was a,
what did you do?
I was a radioman, so we did communications on the
so
on the boat.
Used
so
to
a little bit, yeah. So
that's why your hair looks so good with the
mod. Yeah, he's been practicing.
He's had
practice
8 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we did communications, so anytime the submarine came up to what's called periscope depth, which is like 60 feet. Sorry. It's like 60 feet. And so we stick the periscope out of the water in our antennas, and then we communicate with the guys on land.
That's cool.
And then we dealt with crypto, so like the handling and storage of crypto on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we worked directly under the captain, so it was good. And then I went to dive school in 2013. It's not the same as the Navy divers, but we do, it's like we do just the scuba portion before the guys go into surface applied diving. So like, you know, underwater construction, et cetera. We just do the scuba portion and then we go back to the boat. And so we were just scuba divers on the boat. So it was like a collateral duty, but it was still cool, you know, diving on a submarine, getting under it, because not everybody else. There's only like three of us that were divers on the boat.
That's cool.
So that was cool being able to dive under a sub and, you know, just,
I love scuba diving.
Just to be able to say you did that.
We were
that.
Talking about this earlier before we started, but I got certified. It was like, it was one of the things that I wanted to do when I moved to Florida, because I grew up in Ohio. But, dude, it's like a whole new world down there. Like, not to sound like the Little Mermaid, but we all have like 5-year-old
It's a Little Mermaid.
Yeah,
it is.
Like, yeah. It's amazing.
It's the best.
Okay, so I don't want to keep, I don't want to like, but tell me your best Navy story. Like, the best. Don't, like, tell me the best story.
Okay, what kind of
don't
story?
Don't hold back.
What kind of story?
Well, what just popped in your head just now?
Well,
I have something what just popped in your head?
Badass, exciting, maybe near death.
No, just tell me your your favorite Navy story. Your favorite.
Lord. Well, I can definitely tell you near death from diving, but that was outside of the Navy.
No, give us a Navy one.
We can
give
get
us
to
a
that.
Navy one. We'll get there.
Oh, well, it's gonna sound dumb to say this, but the vast majority of my stories were all of us getting completely shit-faced.
Okay.
And I know one is all of us getting matching tattoos out in San Diego one time.
Really?
Yeah, that was great.
What is it of?
Can I see it?
It's so dumb. Okay, I can actually tell. I can tell the story.
No, he doesn't.
So,
okay, yeah.
He's like, all right,
so,
I gotta go to another one.
Never mind.
Well, no, this story is gonna integrate with that. So, one of our buddies re-enlisted, so everybody went out, and then one of my buddies, so we have, and this also I can kind of like tell you a little bit how the submarine life kind of works. So I'll start with that and then go right back into it. So you have your normal work hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then every 3 days you stand duty. So when you stand duty, you're on the sub for 24 hours and you can't leave. And you have to stand watch in the middle of the night, usually twice, and it's 4 hours long, so sometimes like 8 hours. So you would work all day. And then you'd have duty that same day. So you'd work and then you'd have duty and then you wouldn't leave the boat again. So you'd be there basically every 3 days for like 36 hours, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would be off going. So then you'd work the following day. So you'd be back still on the boat, wake up at 5, do a full another work day. You haven't gone home yet. And then finally get off and then go home. And then the next day you went back to work, you were oncoming. So then you had duty again the next day. And it was like that.
Sheesh.
Constantly. So you cannot fuck up on going to duty. If you were drunk or late or whatever, they would just hammer the fuck out of you. So, buddy reenlists, big party. Everybody goes out. Everybody drinks all night. My buddy, who's actually my recruiter right now, he gets fucked up, doesn't show up for duty the next morning.
Uh-oh.
I get a phone call from my chief, and he's cussing me out first thing in the morning. He's like, I know you fucking did this. I know you were with him. I know it, you motherfucker.
The culprit.
Where is, because we were inseparable. Like, if he was out, I was out. If anybody was together, we were together. So, sure shit, he gets in trouble, goes to captain's mass, which is basically like you don't want to go to mass because you can lose rank, you can get kicked out, lose money, etc. So, we go to mass, and they make 8 of us sit in behind him at his mass in front of our captain.
Oh,
so, the captain restricts him for 60 days to the sub. So, cannot leave, can't go home, can't do shit. So, 60 fucking days.
That's he's a prison sentence.
Prison. So, he's stuck.
Oh, my gosh.
Basically, like, go to jail for 2 months, and you can't do shit. So, he's stuck on the boat.
Oh, geez.
And so, at his mass, he's like, listen.
I would never drink again.
So, at his mass, he's like, all you guys are, you guys, he's like, I like you guys. You guys work hard, you know, you're a bunch of hard workers. He's like, you guys just like to steam, you know. You guys just steam a little too hard. You're just a bunch of steamers. So stupid. So,
oh boy, I know
we get to, so we get to San Diego and we all, so he like, he gets off restrictions. So we're like, we're going out. So we go out day drinking immediately.
Unbelievable.
I have so many issues with
the
thought process.
Yeah. I can kind of relate though.
Dude, we were like 22 at the time, you know, we have more money than we know what to do with.
Right.
None of us are married.
Kings of the world.
None of us have kids.
Yeah, let's get fucked up again.
We're in San Diego. Yeah. We're like, let's 100%. Just fucking, yeah. So we go out, you know, we immediately get kicked out of a bar like usual because one of our buddies is just so obnoxiously loud from doing Jaeger bombs at like 10 a.m. And so we're walking down the street and I think I want to say we're in like might have been in Pacific Beach or somewhere like that in San Diego. And we come around a corner and I just see a giant fucking sign that says tattoo.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, let's fucking get tattoos. And so my buddy who was there pulls out his phone and is like, I got the perfect one. And it's like a steam kettle anchor for us being steamers. Because we've been joking about this because my captain called us this.
Called you steamers. So we go, I love it.
So we go in, and by the way, we are shit-faced. Mm-hmm. It is fucking like the afternoon. It's like maybe 12 in the afternoon. We go in, and we convince them we're not that drunk.
Of course.
And so there's five of us. Two of my one buddy, he gets, they tell him he's too drunk, can't do it. The other three of us, we all get the tattoo. Oh, and then goodness. Our other buddy is so shit-faced that he goes to the bathroom to throw up, ends up puking on the whole entire bathroom, and then escapes out the back door, and we lose him for like 5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's the one that drove us.
Oh,
so we're, so we're in there. And we all get this stupid shit, which I love, but it's this anchor right here.
I see it.
Right? It's a good thing
it.
You explained the story
still,
before I saw it.
Yeah. So still to this day, it's my favorite tattoo probably I've ever got. And
that's
so
hilarious.
Ended up, a bunch of us get it. Somehow we end up finding my buddy. He comes walking down. Like 4 hours later, we're like, dude, we have to get back to base. Like we have work in the morning.
Mm.
We have no idea where he is. Mm. Shout out to my buddy, Quinn Butler. And he comes walking down the street with his shirt on inside out and backwards. He would always, every single time we go out, he would always lose a shoe. So he comes walking up with one shoe like normal, and he has a water bottle like this big. We don't know where he got it from, and he just has puke all down his back.
Oh,
and he just walks
gosh.
Up, and he's like, why'd you guys fucking leave me? And we're like, what do you mean we left you? We're like, dude, you fucking bailed like 4 hours ago. So we're trying to hotwire his Jeep like a bunch of drunk idiots.
Oh,
none of
gosh.
Us know how to hotwire a Jeep, but we're like, we're going to figure this out.
Who thought this was a good idea?
Yeah. Again, 22 and dumb. So he comes, we get in his Jeep, somehow make it to base, and then the next morning we wake up and we're laying in bed and we're just like, dude, why does my arm hurt so bad? And we have no idea.
No.
And I look down, my arm's wrapped up, blood's all over my sheets, and I'm like, dude, what the fuck did we do? And I look down, I'm like, oh my God,
we got
tattoos.
Fucking tattoos
oh
last
my
night.
Gosh.
And then we all start laughing. And then, dude, our like chief found out and just ripped us a new one the next day for like 8 hours.
That's but you all showed up for work.
Oh, yeah, yeah, always.
That's
dude, I can't tell you how many times that we would get like 45 minutes of sleep and be running down the pier for like quarters on the pier, literally like putting on our fucking uniform, running, and then like stand in line and be ready. Like, so many times. It was so dumb. But, again, early 20s.
We've all, well, I haven't been there, but I know he's been there.
America, this is what your armed forces is doing
in
their spare time. Taxpayer
dollars. I do
want to
say thank you for your service,
going,
but now it feels like a little
going
inappropriate.
To work. So, all right. So to keep it in line with the podcast,
rising
exactly.
above.
Sorry for like,
no, I wanted to hear the story.
We did rise above.
No, we you guys
I would
did.
Say we
you
rose
did.
Above that day.
You did.
You
you got the job done.
Yeah.
So, what was it like being on a submarine for that long? Like, what did it do to your mental health?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. I want to understand, did it deteriorate your mental health? Did it make you realize that, you know, did you guys have places to go and people to talk to? Did the military provide that for you? What did that look like?
Yes and no. So it's like, it was really rough. And this is something I've always told people is like, you get shoved into a steel tube and put under, you know, hundreds of feet underwater for months on end or however long. You're not the same person you were when you went down, right, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a mental game. It's rough. I mean, you know, imagine just being locked inside somewhere. Like, okay, mental health in general. Look at how much mental health was happening to people, like, at COVID. Like, being locked inside all day, can't leave your house, can't do anything.
Oh, that's nothing compared
but
to
I'm saying,
what you
like,
guys were going.
I'm saying, like, at least you get to see sunlight, you can go outside, whatever. Like, we don't have that. It's like, once they shut that hatch.
I literally can't imagine that.
Yeah,
I can't imagine not being able to see the sun.
Yeah, once they shut the hatch,
God.
Hatch is shut. And that's it. The only thing we saw was a screen of whenever the periscope was up and you look out and be like, oh, look, sunny day. Or, oh, look, it's raining.
Oh, through a screen.
So we would joke and we would all huddle around the TV and we would all be like, dude, you trying to get a tan? And we'd all sit there and be like, dude, soak up this tan right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, there was a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, there was a lot of guys, you know, and it sucks. But, you know, we had a lot of guys who had, like, you know, suicidal ideations. You know, there are guys who have taken their life, and, you know, military life in general, that's why, you know, it sucks. There's like 22 veterans a day that kill themselves, and it's like a real problem. And there's, you know, yeah, they have programs out there, but there are a lot of guys who, you know, they feel weak, or, you know, they think it's hard for them to go talk to somebody, you know. They don't want to feel like that weak person to go, hey, I have a problem, I need help.
Yeah.
But yeah, once, you know, being on the sub, there were plenty of guys who would, like, have, you know, full-blown, like, mental breakdowns.
Yeah. I think, too, like, probably especially for men, right? Like, this is such a it's such a taboo thing in our society. It's gotten better, for sure, but, like, it's, I can't even imagine being on a, in under hundreds of feet underwater, not being able to see the sun, being depressed, being in the military, which is already like a very, like, strong, like,
yeah, suck it up.
Yeah, suck it up type mentality. Yeah, like being able to, like, cross that line and go talk to someone. Yeah. What do you think that there needs to be changes made? Do you think that they could do a better job of offering services, or like, get, I don't know, maybe even prior to, like, a certain type of training to, like, prepare you for that kind of mental anguish? Because that's,
yeah,
I mean, like you said, it's like a prison, and but you didn't, you're not, you didn't do anything wrong, you're trying to serve your country. So that's like, that's fucked up.
And a lot of guys too, like myself included, like, you have no idea. Like, I remember when I chose it, it was like, I knew what submarines were, but I had no fucking clue. You're just like, oh yeah, I know what that is. And they're just like, okay. And you fill a billet, and they're just like, checking the box, got another one. And then you get down, and you're like, oh shit, I had no idea.
This is really hard. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who, like, quit, or, you know, unfortunately will, you know, claim, like, again, suicidal ideation, stuff like that. And they're like, dude, I have to get the fuck off this thing, or I'm going to go nuts. And there have been people who have gone nuts.
Was there, is there a jail in there? So if someone acts up, let's say, and you're at the bottom of the ocean you can't come up, and someone does something really bad, is there a jail?
No, there's nothing. Like, dude, it's too small. It's way too small. Well, the one I was on, so I was on a fast attack, so it was like 360 feet long. So you had, like, the forward section, and then you have, you know, the reactors in the middle, and then you have back aft, which is the engine room. And the reactor is part of, like, the whole engine room. But
how many guys are on there?
It's like 150. But if we were, like, if we were deployed and you had riders and stuff, it'd be like 170, I think 180 max.
So you're tight. I can remember. You're packed tight.
Oh yeah, and super packed. So again, to talk about, like, how to mentally go through that is, so we have, like, two showers for everybody, for the majority of, like, the enlisted. There's, like, two showers, and then you would what's called hot racking. So there would be, like, three racks. Right, so it'd be like a bottom, a middle, and a top, and then a majority of the time, unless you were like a senior guy and, you know, the guy who wrote the berthing and all that would hook you up with your own rack, but the majority of the time, especially as a new guy, you'd either sleep down in the torpedo room, you know, cuddling a torpedo, or you would hot rack with two other guys. So we, at first, we used to do 666, so 6 hours of sleep, 6 hours of watch, which was your job, and then 6 hours of off going, which is where you'd go study to qualify. But the moment you get out of the rack, the next guy gets in. As soon as he gets out of the rack, the next guy gets in. Oh, and you better hope to God that you don't have somebody who's a stinky fucking turd that doesn't shower, because that happened all the time.
Oh my gosh.
Like, grown men, I can't tell you who would not bathe, who would get in their uniform that they wore all day and sleep in the same, like, linen that you have on there, and like lay on your pillow, and you're just sharing that.
Oh my gosh.
So that was the worst.
Their parents were definitely enablers.
Had to be.
100%.
So what was it like when you came back to civilian life? Like, tell me about, like, post
So that was
enlistment.
So that's one thing, like, you know, there's a lot of guys, and I still have buddies that, like, I talk to, and even to this day, you know, as long as they've been out, or, like, all of us have been out, is, you know, they really struggle with trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Trying to, like,
Adjust back to life.
Try to, you know,
bridge back to life, almost.
God, I hate that I'm forgetting this word. It's killing me right now. But,
just, like, acclimate back to being a civilian?
Acclimate, and, like, just to be able to, like, talk and communicate with most people, mm-hmm. it's kind of difficult mm-hmm. because like we're used to such a certain lifestyle mm-hmm. and then to try to, because a lot of things we say or do, and then like you talk to people who've never been in or never served the military mm-hmm. and that just goes all branches. Like you can meet anybody, even to this day, anybody that's like been in the military mm-hmm. I can like
instantly, you have a camaraderie.
You just like, yeah. What'd you do? Okay, cool. Instantly, right. Like, we can hit it off. Mm-hmm. And then other people, it's kind of, it's difficult because you're like, I don't know if I'm going to say something that might offend them.
Right.
There's a lot of times we do say
did
stuff that's offensive.
Did you feel self-conscious like that when you came off?
At first, it was a little weird trying to acclimate and all that. But I luckily, when I got out, I went to commercial dive school mm-hmm. up in Seattle, Washington. And so the vast majority of all those guys that were there, it was all guys. And pretty much all of them were all ex-military. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. that really helped, like me especially, was going from military with nothing but dudes right into basically military but minus the uniforms with nothing but guys.
Right.
So we all hit it off great, you know, especially like on the weekends if we hung out, you know, guys would swap stories, kind of help with each other yeah. mentally getting mm-hmm. through things like, you know, especially like, what are you struggling with? Or you know. So that helped a lot for me.
You found your tribe.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. you know, you find other people just like you and, you know, been through similar stuff that you have, especially mm-hmm. like, you know, mentally. That's mm-hmm. the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. And so that helped tremendously doing that. And then for like the next 5 years was doing underwater construction and you still worked with a vast majority military guys. Mm-hmm. And so that really helped a lot. But I know so many people who didn't have that and they just went straight from that to like college. And I had buddies who went to college or after military, and they were just like, dude.
I can't imagine. Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine being in that type of environment for a long period of time and then going, like, yeah. Not to talk shit about college students, but.
You can.
You know, the majority of them are very unaware yeah. and, I would say, like, self-centered and. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Childish.
Really? Oh. Yeah. Wow. No, you're absolutely right.
I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to talk shit.
1,000% correct.
That I can't.
Coddled. Yeah, yeah, the whole nine. Yeah, absolutely.
Heath actually was the one that told me this because he was going to school out in Texas and he was like, these like 18-year-old kids would get up in class and be like, you know, right after someone would say something, be like, you need to go ahead and check your privilege before you speak like that. I would.
What?
I feel like I would absolutely lose my fucking
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, like the entitlement that comes with that age.
An 18-year-old who hasn't done fuck all with their life right. and is like, you need to check your fucking privilege and watch what you say. Mm. And you're only here because the military is giving you free education. It's like, dude.
Oh, that would be tough.
You have no idea.
That would be tough.
Yeah. I was that guy saying the privilege.
Oh, God.
No, but... going back to what you were saying, I love the dynamic with, you know, when you were working and swapping stories with mm-hmm. other people who were in the military. So mm-hmm. I'm sober. I go to meetings. I go to meetings where there are other people in sobriety. And that camaraderie, I'm able to open up with those people mm-hmm. because they understand what I went through, what I'm going through. I'm not alone, right? Mm. So I think it's important, you know, for the audience to hear this. Surrounding yourself with people who have been through similar mm-hmm. situations, mm-hmm. experiences, whatever it may be. I think that's very important to always surround yourself with people who have experienced
that. 100%.
And it's important to know. I don't want to speak for people, but no matter what the situation is, whatever yeah. you're going through, there are people out there that have been through the same thing
100%.
And can relate.
Mm-hmm. And you're not the only one. There's plenty of people who have been through it and who are going through it right now.
Yeah.
And that's with anything. So right. I completely agree with you with that. And the biggest thing, too, is like a lot of guys, I feel like as a man, is they struggle with opening up.
Yes.
So, like, I've struggled with that yes. so much in my life is yep. trying to, because I'm like, don't be a bitch. Don't be a pussy. Like,
yep.
shove it down.
Where do you think that comes from, guys? Like, just, okay, so just because I'm a female and mm. I...
She says that to men.
No, but I just want, like, I definitely, yeah. I mean, I guess there is a part of me that also, like, does that, like, suck it up, buttercup mm-hmm. type mentality, but... I know. I mean, I just know that it has to be 10 times what I feel for you guys. And where does that come from?
Like, it's society.
Is it
it's,
just like I think in, society. Ingrained
in the
movies in
our... we watch, in the television shows we watch, the like it's just
like, do you remember anyone telling you like don't cry or like do, like is that like is this real? Like,
I mean, yeah, I mean, plenty of people have been like, quit,
don't be a pussy.
Quit fucking whining. Quit being a pussy. Like, dude, everybody's eating this fucking turd sandwich right now. Like, no one gives a shit about your feelings. Especially like going back to like on the sub or like even when I was diving, it's a lot of fucking hard men and especially mentally. And what men don't want to hear is other men bitching and complaining about their fucking problems. And that's what a lot of guys too, especially myself. And I have been, you know, my buddies that know me, I've had plenty of times where I've, you know, break down, you know, complaining about shit, but you know, you're trying to vent, but then you don't want to sound like a bitch and, you know, complaining too much, but
finding the right people that are safe for you to do that with.
Well, people who want to listen and, you know, and have gone through the same type of deal or same things and, you know, they're there for you. And like, that's why, you know, like, you know, Heath is one of my best ones. Like, we sit and vent. We talk about life all the time. And like, you know, what are you going through? What are you struggling with? What's happening?
Like, check in with your homies.
Always check in. It's great.
And that's, I love that.
And that's something I would love to say to, you know, guys out there, especially, you know, veterans. Like, dude, if you have not called your buddies, if you have not talked to them in a while, please give them a call.
Dude, what did we talk about? Phone. Pick up the phone.
Yeah. It's not hard.
Pick up the phone.
Just pick up the phone. Send a message. Just something, because you have no idea at how much, like, you don't know what people are going through on a day-to-day basis or what's happening right now in their life. And they could like that one phone call or that one message could be something that actually stops them from doing something that they might regret for the rest of their life.
Yep.
That is so powerful.
Yeah,
it really is.
I'm very glad you said that because also too, on the flip side, and even listen, I'm going to say it selfishly, it holds you accountable as well. It holds all parties accountable when you're in constant contact with people. You don't know what they're going through. You could save that person. You could help that person. It's self-esteemable acts and not even knowing you're participating in self-esteemable acts.
What I love about it is, like, we all three come from very different backgrounds, right? Like, Kevin's background is totally different from yours, and my background is totally different from your guys's. But the one thing that I find a common thread in is, like, when I talk to survivors of sexual abuse, or when people say, what would you tell someone? What would you tell a younger you? I would say something, pick up the phone, you know, have the strength to be vulnerable enough to reach out and ask for help. Like, that's the strongest thing you can do, is reach out and ask for help. And I promise you, there will be someone there to help you. Like, whether you believe in God or what, if you're spiritual, like, That act, I truly believe, like, has power in and of itself.
And I think for a lot of people, that's the hardest step is asking.
Oh, like, yeah.
Everything after that kind of just flows, but it's that initial asking for help, you know, just trying to reach out to somebody that's always the most difficult.
Well, that's a very vulnerable position to be in. Oh. Asking for help, being humble, that is...
Well, we all have this, like, illusion of control, right? We all have this belief that, like, we can manage it or contain it or deal with it or stuff it down deep enough or whatever it is, however it is that you cope with it, deal with whatever issues you have, like, and to get to the point where you ask for help means you realize, like, my life is unmanageable, this is out of control, I can't do this by myself.
Nobody can
That's like, and a very human thing, nobody can.
And that's one thing I've been learning more over, like, especially like this past year, maybe even like past 2 years, is I have always just buried, I've always just buried everything down. And there's one thing I've learned recently is the deeper you keep burying that down and keep stacking that shit on top of each other, it'll come out in ways that you did not expect. And it's rough when it comes out because you're just like, what the fuck did I just do? Or what am I doing? Where did this come from? And you're like, oh yeah, I have not reached out. I haven't vented about this. I haven't talked to anybody about this.
I've just been burying
this emotion deep down, and then it can just come out in any way. And you just, when you least expect it. And then you have to sit back and reflect and go, okay, that's why that happened.
Right. Either you come to the realization that your life is out of control and you need help, or your life makes it a realization, like 100%. From your actions, from your choices, from like you said, it's just coming out in ways that you didn't even think were possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there a million times. So you were talking a little bit about like going from the Navy to going into commercial diving, and you've talked a lot about you had men in your life, but you have a daughter, so I'm assuming eventually you met women.
Yeah, once.
And you talked about
the first girl I met, I married her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're saying that you're going through a tough divorce right now, and mentally, like, that's been really hard. I wonder if you wanted to share any of, like, talk about that story at all. Maybe help some of our listeners who might be going through the same thing.
Of course. And, you know, hopefully I'll try not to go down too much of a rabbit hole, and just let me know if I get...
You're good.
Yep. If I get off.
This is a safe space.
Let's not character assassinate. Let's focus on the feelings and let's
lots of I statements.
Yeah. Let's unpack the feelings.
All right. So so right now with what I'm going through, and hopefully, you know, and again, I'm not the first guy that's gone through this, and I'm not gonna be the last guy that's gone through this.
Mm-hmm.
Or women or anything. Plenty of people have gone through this. But in 2021, me and my ex, we split, and we were going through like a year and a half divorce. It was a nightmare. It was rough, you know, lawyers, everything, just fighting constantly. And then we decided to try to, you know, work things out and get back together. So we did. And then I left, you know, West Palm, moved back to towards Jacksonville. We got a house. Luckily, we were just renting and didn't buy one. And so moved back in. Finally, you know, was with my daughter. You know, we're struggling, just like most people nowadays, everybody's struggling. So I was working three jobs. She was working part-time on the weekends. That was it. And then basically like staying home with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, it only lasted about 8 months. And she...
How long were you guys together the first time?
So we've been on and off, basically. We've been married for 5.5, almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in the house. And then I find out that in those 8 months, I found out 4 times that she's still been talking to 2 of the guys that she was sleeping with when we were separated.
Mm.
And the 4th time I caught her, and I just kept giving her another chance. And, you know, a 4th time I caught her, she was using a burner phone. So her like old cell phone that she was like, oh, I just want it so I can play games on it. And I'm like, bullshit, but whatever. So I come to find out, you know, fake Instagram of like her mom's company, still following every guy that she's like cheated on me with in the past, still talking to the same guys after I've said, stop doing this or I will divorce you.
Mm.
So I catch her, and I'll try to not make this too long, but, so in October, I was a personal trainer, and, you know, I worked at a gym, and then I also started my own side thing for a minute. So I was getting ready for work, and I was leaving the house at 6 o'clock in the morning. She was sleeping in the spare bedroom. And as I cranked the moment I cranked my car up, her Bluetooth linked to my phone or linked to my car. And it was another dude named Brock coming through my phone, through my car.
My goodness.
And I could hear his voice and see his name through the car.
Oh.
And she's trying to call him over at 6 a.m. while I'm going to work and our daughter's sleeping in her bedroom.
Oh.
So I go in and confront her, and then big fight. She's like, you're making it all up. You're a liar. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to work. And so I get like 5 miles on the road, call her, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, it's 6 in the morning. What are you doing?
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, this guy's voice comes through the car and just starts cussing me out. So I'm like, this dude's in my house with my kid.
Mm.
So I flip a Yui, hauled ass back home, and I get to the house. I go to the door, confront her. I don't even have words to express how I felt. So I end up taking a screwdriver, undoing the door, take the door off, go in there. He's
because
not
they wouldn't open it.
They wouldn't open it.
Trying to get it. Okay.
So,
your house.
My house.
Oh,
so I take the doorknob off. By the way, I have video of all this. So everything I say, I have either video of this, paperwork of this.
Mm-hmm.
I have evidence for all this. I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass.
You were acquitted, actually. So wherever this is going, he was acquitted.
I was acquitted
legally.
So
I think it's important.
I don't
know.
Yeah, okay.
But so, where he's going. Yeah, go ahead.
So I go into the room. He wasn't there. She put him on 3-way call just to, like, I'm pretty sure to set me up. So words get, you know, going back and forth. Well, she threatens to go kill herself. So she goes and grabs my gun, which isn't the first time she's tried doing this. I had her Baker acted in 2021 because she cut her wrist to pieces with my beard trimmer.
Oh my God.
And that was great. And then so I go in the room, basically tackle her onto the bed, pull the gun away. And then shortly later, my daughter wakes up, comes out, sits on the couch with me, trying to watch cartoons. She comes back out, starts throwing stuff, breaking stuff, gets in my face. So I record her because she's trying to leave. So this video is what saved me in court. So I start recording her. The moment I turn the phone off, she bum rushes me while I'm holding my daughter and starts punching me in the side of the head. So I'm covering my kid up as I'm getting punched to make sure she doesn't get hit. At this point, I call the police. You know, I stay on the phone for 15 minutes before they get there. They take me outside to get my side of the story. As I'm outside talking to the police, she's in the spare bedroom and just starts to commence to claw her neck and her chest with her fingernails. So they go in the house. They see marks on her, arrest me right in front of my kid. So I get put in jail for 2 days for domestic violence and battery charges. And as soon as I get out, they slap an ankle monitor on me for a month. I can't go within 500 feet of her or my kid. She files her third injunction on me in the last 4 years. I can't talk to my kid, can't see her, can't know anything about her. I lose my house. I lost all three of my jobs that day. She stole my car. She stole everything from birth certificates, social security card, passport, all my military awards, all my dive gear, all my military uniforms. She bleached my clothes, broke the zippers off my pants. You name it, took it. And so thank God for Heath. And they let me move in with them as I was getting through this. Had to get two lawyers, divorce and defense. And then, so been dealing with that. And then come to find out the moment I am like out of jail, she is already moved in with one of the guys she was cheating on me with my daughter. And they live there now. So fight the defense lawyer. They dropped all the charges. We didn't have to step foot in court. State prosecutor was literally told my lawyer said, I was like, what are the legal terms she said? I was like, too many discrepancies in her statement. And I was like, what did she actually say? And she goes, oh, that bitch lied. So dropped everything. And then now fighting the divorce. So I just recently was able to see my kid for the first time. I got her for Christmas. And then they kept her from me for another like 32, 33 days. Talked to her maybe 2-3 times. And then finally got her this past weekend when we hung out and had, you know, our two daughters together. Ugh. So now I'm like trying to get her again like every other week. But it's just been a fucking nightmare from hell. So, yeah.
Nobody, I think, so first of all, like before we even get into that, talk to me a little bit about, because I think that this is something that we don't talk about enough for men. Like, I was in an abusive relationship, and to get out of it was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. I would go back. I mean, you almost killed me. I would go back.
Same.
And me getting my kids, really, like, I call it God. God saved my life. Because if I never had the strength to leave for myself. But when I got those kids, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I've got to get my life together. But talk to me about, like, how hard that is. And you have a child with this person. Like, obviously, at one point, you loved her. Like, this didn't, you know, it wasn't like
the whole reason
it wasn't. This is what I think people don't understand about abusive relationships. Is it's not like they're all bad. You know, it's not like it's like 24/7 chaos. Like, they, you know, narcissists. Keep you holding on.
Well, to go off that, and
they love bomb you, and then they discard you, they.
So that's what I'm sure you probably went through the same thing. So it's like, hey, you know, tell me if I'm wrong. You'll have like they'll give you like the greatest week of your life, and you're like, holy shit, and they suck.
This
you
is what
in.
I've been waiting for.
It's like, oh my god, I can finally fill that hole in my heart. This like this abyss of just love, and you're like, holy shit, things are great. Like, I can't believe this is good. And then out of nowhere, like that.
Yep.
They'll give you 2-3 weeks of hell, and then all of a sudden they'll start reeling you back in, give you another good week, maybe two tops. So our whole marriage,
the cycle,
maybe 2 weeks was the longest I can ever remember of things being good, and then it would be like another week to 3 weeks or 4 weeks of just hell, and then they'd suck you back in.
So yeah, no, and I've been there. Oh, honey, I've been there.
it's something I've been reading more about is they call it trauma bonding.
Yep. Trauma
and
bonding.
I've never heard that before until
it's
recently.
It's chemical, dude.
So
it's like it's the same as addiction. It's not to point at you when I say addiction.
No, you're
it's the same as addiction.
For me, I've been realizing more now is she has been my she is my addiction. Mm-hmm. So for the last like almost 6 years, like mm-hmm. I have been truly addicted to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've even told
her. To the high that you feel when she is.
There's no love bombing. There's no drug or alcohol right. that can right. fucking make me feel the way right. when things were good with her, when she would like, you know, mm-hmm. put this
turn
facade
on,
turn mm-hmm. that shit on. I would just be like, oh my God, this is, I can't wait to spend the rest of my life
and
with this
so
person.
Many men don't, yeah. I feel like don't. Are not educated on that, right? Like, because it does happen to men too all the time. Like, mm-hmm. they're narcissists aren't only male, you know, like there yeah. are female narcissists too.
Just and, shitty people.
Living proof, right?
Yeah.
Here.
And so rock bottom. So after that, you were done.
Yeah.
After that, that well, was like the
moment,
rock bottom.
Well, the moment
that was
I was
the moment things changed.
Laying in a fucking jail
yeah.
going, why in mm. the fuck am I here?
Mm.
And,
ugh,
you know, that, and then on top of that, what sucks is like as soon as I get out too, so her and the guy she was cheating on me with, I got three. So I talked to my bank, Navy Federal, and had to talk with their fraud department. And for 3 days while I was in jail and out of jail, they were calling. The guy was pretending to be me and trying to transfer all my funds to his, quote, wife. And I have all this in writing. I have
oh
everything
gosh.
Through the fraud department. I've got all this.
You're like, I was in jail.
Yeah.
It wasn't
like,
me.
I've been in jail for the last 2 days. And they were like, you didn't do this? I was like, no, I didn't do it. So
oh
when I say
gosh.
I had to change everything, like
ugh.
You talk about rock bottom. That's when I laid there and was just like, okay, this is finally, I think this is either God telling me or the universe, something saying, you're done, dude. Like, you need to do something else with your life and move on. Like, this woman is going to destroy you.
Yeah.
Which she did.
Right.
But I'm trying to stay in the best, you know, talking about rise above, I'm trying to stay in the best positive attitude. The way I look at this is this guy or these men, they didn't steal my wife away. They didn't take my wife from me. They took my problem away. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they
wow.
got, so
damn.
That's where I'm at more yeah. mentally. And I keep telling myself that every day because there's still like, you're still stuck with that, you know, bond, that trauma bond. We're like, there's still...
No, it's literally like breaking an addiction.
Yeah, there's still that piece in my head that's like, I have to shut down every day that's like, oh, maybe we can fix this. And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude,
mm-hmm.
you are never fixing this.
Mm-hmm.
And you are a fucking idiot if you think you're ever going to fix this or go back to this. Because people like that don't change. They've been
right.
that way their whole life. They will always be that way. They will never change because they're never wrong. They'll never admit to being wrong. It's always...
I find that they're just so unaware. Like, they don't think there's a problem. You
no.
can't change if you're not aware
no.
that there's a problem or like there that you can't change if you don't know, you know, that no. I have come to the place where I actually feel a lot of, I have a lot of grace and sympathy
mm-hmm.
for people like that because I know in order to be that way, something really bad had to have happened to them to make them that person.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. It's really mm-hmm. sad that they're going to live the rest of their life repeating that cycle. Like, it could be, you know, Brock or John or, like, it just insert person here.
Yeah.
It's still going to be the same cycle of, like, toxic chaos over
they're gonna,
and over
and
over
and she'll
again.
Do the same thing to
it's
this
sad.
New guy that she did
right.
to me. And then after him, once he's used up, move
right.
on to the next.
But give yourself grace, dude, because really, like... It takes so much strength to get out of a situation like that, especially with a kid involved. And like,
that's the hardest part about all of it.
I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine.
But I wouldn't be where I'm at without these good people in my life. Like, I'm very blessed. Like, my family is helping me through this.
Mm-hmm.
And then my buddies, you know, like we talked, you know, my buddy Heath and then Dylan, who you know. If it wasn't for them, like, you know, Dylan literally, as soon as it happened, was just like, because I had nowhere to go. I literally was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, come back. Door's wide open. Don't worry about nothing. He's like, my house is, he's like,
isn't that
he
beautiful?
Goes, I got a bed for you. He's like, you'll get your old room again. We can fucking.
Your old
we can,
room again.
Yeah, dude.
You got your old room for you,
yeah.
buddy.
So
come on home.
It was so funny. Aww. And what's so funny, like talking about rock bottom is like, so the first time I moved in with him, I literally all I had was a mattress on the floor. That was it. And then
you moved up.
And then now, yeah. And then now there's an actual, now there's
suite.
An actual bed. And I'm
box,
like, I got a frame.
There's
a box
bed.
Spring.
Dude, there's
I got
a full,
sheets.
There's a full bed and I got like two dressers.
Sometimes
put shit
how
in.
Men live really just like astounds
it's absurd.
Me.
Yeah.
It literally is so simple for us. Like, we don't need much of nothing.
You're like a TV,
yeah,
a mattress.
I have a question. So staying in the solution here, right? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people who mm-hmm. are going through, experienced mm-hmm. what you experience, mm-hmm. Kayla.
Stuck in it right now.
Yeah.
The struggling. Trauma bonding, the... being in a relationship or trying to get out of a relationship,
a toxic
with a narcissist,
environment, yeah,
and they're addicted to that. What are you doing now mm-hmm. today?
Yes.
And what have you implemented in your daily life to help you? Like you said, every day is a decision where you need to say no. Like, what am I thinking? I can't talk to her. Like, she's right. bad for me. You have to make that decision every day
mm-hmm.
now. What have you implemented in your life to prevent that?
So biggest thing with me is, like, I'm not going to go back to where I was the first time. So the first time, and, you know, it, like we discussed earlier, like, so alcoholism runs really deep on both sides of my family. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I have struggled with for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I'm an alcoholic, but I have had moments where, you know, they say alcoholism is hereditary. And, like, for me, I've gotten caught up where, you know, I've literally tried to drown myself mm. in a bottle because mm-hmm. I thought this, as long as I can stay numb,
yep.
then
yep.
I'll be okay.
Yep.
And so for me,
it's a symptom.
So for me, what has helped is, and this is just my personal belief, is you have to put your body through some type of physical, you know, workout. You cannot
endorphins.
Sit here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my mm-hmm. high now is I go to the gym. So I lift, I go to the gym mm-hmm. usually like
You've changed it to something
twice
healthy.
A day. So everything now is like, because I know I can easily go right back and just drink my sorrows away and mm-hmm. be like, whoa, fucking is me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone feels sorry for me. So mm-hmm. me is just like, my happy place is going to the gym. So mm-hmm. I have to put my, like, I literally am like going to fight demons. So mm-hmm. I go to the gym and work out for like, 2 hours a day. Mm. Sometimes I do it twice a day. Mm. And the only reason why I have that time right now is because of everything that's happened. I'm you know, lucky right now to have that time, but this has been the best buildup for me to get back mentally.
Mm-hmm. It's what you need right now.
Everyone. So anybody going through the same thing, there's so many people who have such sedentary lifestyle,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they just sit and do nothing, and they're mm-hmm. just literally, their bodies are just withering away.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to put my body through some type of, like, some type of resistance, some type of stress,
mm-hmm.
and it takes away. So all my emotional pain and mm-hmm. everything, I just like, okay, well, I'm just going to beat my body up so that way right. it makes me feel better.
You're literally regulating your nervous system when you do that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's science.
Well, one, I feel better. You feel better. You right. look better. You sleep better.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating better. Everything gets better.
It's a trickle down effect. You start mm-hmm. there. You start somewhere.
Yep.
And then it slowly bleeds into all areas of your life, and you're like, you start taking better care of yourself. Yeah. That's a form of self care.
And something that, like, I've been away from for a very, very, very long time, and I was very against it for a long time, and I'm fine with opening up with it now. You know, I've started praying again. And,
I'm so happy
yes!
you went there. I was like, just say the word.
Yeah.
The word.
Go there.
Yeah, so, like,
I really wanted to ask you, like, this whole podcast, like, are you spiritual? Like, do you have a belief in a higher power?
Can I don't want to freak anyone out or anything.
Yeah,
no. No, and honestly, like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I've been anti-religion, and I have reasons, like we were discussing earlier. I've had several, you know, situations happen in life where some of the worst people I have ever met were these devoted Christian and big religious people. Mm. And they come to find out that, I mean, they are just the lowest of low scum I have ever met. So I was anti-God, church, religion, all that for the last like 15 plus years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I hated it. I detested
mm-hmm.
religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually before all this went down, I actually just, something was like, hey, man, you should probably start praying. And I don't know if that was a sign that something bad was coming. And I think
God was like, hey, you about to need me.
But I literally,
you already were at your bottom.
Think he was like, hey, dude, like, I'm about to, some shit's about to happen to you.
Yeah.
I know that's a horrible thing to say as I'm sitting here talking about God. I'm like,
no,
cuss.
That's your perspective. No. You're entitled
to your
perspective. But,
absolutely.
Yeah, so I started just like, even when I was going to work, so like I would bring my Bible, and it's the same Bible, and what something I did, like my whole time in the Navy, was not religious, hated all of it. But I had a lady who, she passed away from cancer in like 2012, but right before I left for Guam, she was friends with my mother and showed up and gave me a Bible with like my name engraved and wrote me a nice little note. And I just kept that as a safekeeping. I never read it. I would just bring it every time I went out to sea, and I just thought it was like something that would keep me safe. And maybe it did. I don't know. I'm not dead yet. So I would just bring it with me. And then once all this, like before this started, you know, all this went down and happened with my life, I, you know, I would sit outside the gym waiting on clients, and I would just sit and read and just have like a little devotional to myself. And the more I did that, then things started opening up for me. Like I had clients who were just like, hey, can you start like working me out on the side? I'm like, oh, hell yeah, dude. So then I like started my own little side business there for a minute, and, you know, was doing really well with that. And it was awesome. It was starting to kickstart. And then, you know, once everything fell through, then I really turned myself to, started to pray more. And that's actually helped me a lot with, mentally, like, especially like, cause it, I can get real, my nerves will take over, and I'll start getting, I can get heated really, really quick, and then I just, like, it takes me forever to calm down. Not that, like, I'm a violent or, you know, person, but, like, I'll just, by myself, I just start, you know, I just want to, you just get so angry.
That's why I punch people.
Yeah. So you get that out that
totally
way. So it's great.
Yeah.
And so I can't punch people. Even though I would love to.
We're going to have you come to the gym.
Yeah,
anytime you want to come to the gym, you can come punch
them. Yeah, I'd love to
can punch a bag at least.
Yeah. So
I don't know if I want you to punch me, but.
No.
You could punch me.
Yeah, you can punch Kevin. Absolutely. We're going to arrange that.
Well, yeah, I need to do that. I used to do, like, in high school and college, I kickboxed for a while, and that was always the greatest thing ever.
It's such a good release, right?
It was the greatest release in the world. It was so much fun. And yeah,
I think all kids should be in martial arts. Like, not to go off on a tangent here, but I do think it is so good.
Can't agree more.
To have that self-discipline, that self-respect. It gives an inner confidence that like kicking a ball doesn't give. It's not the same, you know, like knowing that your body can protect you.
Yeah,
I guess. Anyways,
if I say her name in front of Lumi, because she was coaching Lumi for a little bit.
I know. I'm going to bring it back soon.
And she went to kids judo with Coach Kayla. So anytime I say Kayla's name, she's like, who? I'm like, Coach Kayla. She's like, okay. Like, she's very disciplined with
Coach.
It's so funny. But,
yeah, but I do want to say, I love that. First of all, no one ever, I don't know many people that have ever gotten in trouble by opening their Bible, right? Like, this is this is like a good, this, like, working out, reading your Bible, praying, like, religion is man-made, and that's broken. But faith is a very personal thing, and it's very, you know, that's your spirit. That's your soul. That's your connection with your higher power. And, yeah, oh, I'm so glad that you said that, because I think...
I'm going to be honest. I was concerned when you just said the gym, because I've been... The gym is great.
It is great.
But, like, that higher power... You know, for me, and I can't speak for you, anything is possible. For me, I was always putting down drugs or alcohol and then filling it with too much work or, you know, just overworking or going to the gym or seeing a new girl or getting married or having a child. And all of those things would just, the void would eventually open up again and I'd have to fill it with something else. I love that you talked about religion and implementing that, because that is something, you know, when you're powerless, you can rely on a power that's greater than yourself. And there is something, someone you can turn to.
Yeah. And I'm not like, sit here and say I'm like this big, you know, devotional religious guy whatsoever. I'm just now like starting over the last I would say 6 months, maybe like 6 months, like kind of dabbling, getting back into it. But just even the little bit that I have done,
it's amazing.
Has helped so much. And like, I don't have a church I'm affiliated with. I haven't even, I've, you know, really, I haven't been to church or anything like that. I still struggle with that. Cause like, I feel like I get way more out of doing your own devotional thing or like being around, like even back in the day, you know, when I was a kid or high school, you know, you had a certain group, and I would get way more out of being around like a smaller group of individuals who mm-hmm. all are like-minded, and we can like go off each other, mm-hmm. vent to each other, tell each other, you know, what are you going through, talk about, you know, what they're experiencing with God and how he's affecting his life or her life, et cetera, mm-hmm. then going to, I just don't like big churches. I don't know. I just think there's so many fake people in that.
Mm.
And amen. To go back to you about what I was telling you about my brother and yeah. My brother is one of the main reasons why I turned against God and church completely as a whole is because of him and what he did to me and my dad.
Mm. Explain to Kayla.
If you feel comfortable.
Yeah, of course.
Only if you feel comfortable.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't speak or seen each other in 10 years, so I'll talk about it. My brother married a preacher's daughter, and his father-in-law is like the head of a big church out in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2013, my dad got diagnosed with throat cancer. Mm. And so my dad never smoked, never dipped, never nothing, right? Always took care of himself, worked out. Like, mm-hmm. he's still to this day, he's 65. He runs two businesses, lifts every week, and does boxing classes. So he's always taking care of himself. But when he got diagnosed, my brother shortly after that, February of 2014 was the last time we ever saw him. So he came to visit my dad once while he was going through. So he had a stomach tube put in. He had a port put in his chest. So he was doing chemo and radiation at the same time. They basically told me he had like a 10% chance to live if he didn't do both. And then right after that, my brother came to visit for like 2 hours and then left, never saw him again. And to this day, I think he's got like 3 kids now. I have no idea any other names.
Oh my
never
goodness.
Met him. Mm. My father has
but
no idea.
But he's like super religious, your brother?
To me, that's a cult. That is not religion.
Yeah.
That's not faith. That's not,
well, that,
that's,
yeah,
a, that's
not
cult.
Like,
that's
not
a full-blown
Christian.
Cult. Christians don't do it. If you're really a Christian
or
anything for that matter, like, you don't do that to family.
Mm-hmm.
Especially family that's been there for you and done everything for you. Especially like my dad, who would literally did everything for him.
Mm.
And just a treat like that. I just don't know anybody that's the lowest of the low. You're going to abandon your own father when he's been told he's diagnosed with cancer and is dying. And you're just like, all right, bye. See ya.
Yeah.
And then never call to check to see if he was ever okay.
Oof.
Never ask to see if he was alive.
Mm.
And
that would leave a bad taste in anybody's mouth.
Yeah. So it left a horrible taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
And
So these actions shied you away from
big time
the church and religion
it.
And but I think also too very important and a takeaway here is okay, yeah, like you're not ready to go into a church, but you're implementing these small things into your life.
Right.
Easy does it. Little at a time. Like
right.
you don't need to change, you don't need to be poster boy,
right?
You know,
and also like there's no perfect people. Like it doesn't
exactly.
it's not a like that's
no.
yeah. I mean everyone I go to church regularly. I'm very active in my church. My kids are, you know, I was at a Bible study before I came here, actually. But yeah, like that's the number one. I used to feel very, really self-conscious when I would go to, so I am a part of a small group. We go to a pretty big church and like to become more involved, I started going to a small group, and it was all families with young children. That was the group. So I don't know if you know any. I adopted my kids. I like became a mom overnight. So I had no mom friends when I became a mom. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I still don't really know what the hell I'm doing.
None
but,
of us do.
Right. I know that now.
Yeah.
But
I was her first mom friend.
He has better hair than most of the moms, including me.
Yeah, he does. Look at that.
But I used to feel so self-conscious because I'm like the only single mom there. I'm like, and I just thought that they were all these perfect, you know, like Mr. Rogers, sweater wearing, like grew up in the church, like have no problems, life is perfect, Mary Poppins, mofos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not true. Like,
no,
it's not true. There's no perfect people. They all have their own flavor of sin and drama and toxic and chaos and whatever you want to call it. And like, once I realized that, I was able to be more vulnerable and really just show up as myself.
Mm-hmm.
And lucky for me, like, they're good Christian people who they just love me. Like, they don't.
That's awesome.
They don't care.
Yeah.
And I know that you'll find that too. But that's one thing I think. I love that you're praying. I love that you're in your Bible. I love that you're open to it. I love that you're going to the gym. And I think that's such an important, those two pieces are so important, and we've talked a lot about them with other people. And you touched on it earlier, and I hope you continue down that path of like finding your tribe. Like, to be human is to need connection. Like, we don't grow by ourselves.
Which I've done that, and it's the worst. It's the worst thing ever. Because you sit there and you get in your own head, and there's no worse place I'd rather be than in my own head. It's literally hell to me. I hate it. You just sit there and you're just running 1,000 miles an hour, all these different scenarios.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it is. We've all been there.
No.
So if there was someone in your shoes listening to this podcast right now, let's say Josh 6 months ago or even a year ago, when shit started hitting the fan with you and your ex.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom, Josh.
What advice would you give them?
Oh, man. Biggest thing is just try to, if you do have them in your life, you know, reach out to the people that love you, you know, confide in them. Just know that you're not alone. That's the biggest thing. Know that you're not alone. I know, especially coming from me, you feel like, why is this happening to me? I'm the only person this is happening to. You're not. You're not the only person. You're not the first. You ain't the last. And there's plenty of people going through it at the same time. Don't just sit and stay inside. Go do something. Anything. Biggest thing, like we're talking about, prayers helped me tremendously. And now not doing it, I try to do it every day. I'm not going to sit here and say I do it every day. I do slip up. You know, there's several days I go by. But when I do it again, I feel this giant relief. And, you know, put your body, do something that's beneficial to your life. You know, like for me, I mean, I go back to the gym because that's my happy place. And that's what helps me mentally, because I feel like if I'm putting my body through physical exertion and I'm trying to, you know, benefit for my body, it's going to help my mind. And it's always helped me by doing
honestly,
that.
It sounds like it's your form of meditation.
It really
That's
is.
That's what it sounds
so,
cause like to
me. I've done like, I've tried therapy before, and I'm just like, dude, I don't know you. You don't know me. This is just such a waste of money and a waste of time.
I'm so pro therapy.
Maybe,
Josh,
maybe
you
I haven't. Talking to the wrong people
maybe
right
I
now.
This is over.
Looking, finding the right therapist is like finding the right partner. You just got to try a couple on, okay?
Maybe I haven't found the right one. That's me. I just feel like I haven't found the right one yet.
No. You know? It helped me. Yeah. I know, Kayla, you've spoken about it. It helped you. Therapy is not
for
everyone.
And there's different types, and there's like,
yeah,
fucking working out is therapy. It's also a form of therapy for me.
Meditation.
Like, the gym is my happy place too, dude. Yeah. Don't get like, especially when the kids are screaming and they're there, mom, and like, these people want this for me, and these people want that for me. Like, oh, I feel
Bella,
so good.
Where are you?
Yeah,
I need
it feels
help.
So good to just go to the gym and fucking not think about anything but what I'm doing right then.
Because that's like, for me, it's the one thing in my life that I have full control over. So the more I put in to working out, the more I'm going to get out of it. So that's what I love. And like the camaraderie and people too. Like, I met like a couple guys who are like in their late 50s, early 60s, and they've been basically my therapist, I guess, because they've experience, they've lived through lives, they've had multiple divorces, and I can sit and confide in them, and I talk to them, and they're like, been there, done that, buddy. And then they're like, oh, what happened to you? Yep, same happened to me, my ex did that.
In recovery.
And so, like, as we lift, you know, we're focusing on that, it kind of shuts your brain off from all the bullshit going on in your life. But then, in between sets and stuff, we can sit and talk about life. What's going on with you? How's everything going?
Like, small doses.
How's your daughter doing? Did you get her this week? Did you get talk to her? And then it's like, thanks, man. Like, I really needed that. So it'll end up being like 2 hours. I'm just sitting there, you know, you're lifting, you're coking and joking, but you're also getting good stuff out of it because you've met like really good people who've already been through what you've been through. And that kind of helps you realize that you aren't the only person. And then you do have good people out there that you can relate to.
And God puts those people in your life. Like, those people are there.
That's what I've noticed more, I feel like. Like, the more things that keep lining up and keep happening and going in a good direction for me right now. Because I felt like just, dude, I didn't know what to do. Like, when this initially happened, I was just
lost.
I was in a dark, dark mental spot. Like, I don't ever want to go back there. And for, you know, people, you know, listening, like, you got to get out of that. You can't let those thoughts take over, because there are some dark thoughts that will take over.
Yeah.
And you got to realize it's at the end, you can't let the other person win, because if you do something that you could regret or could affect everybody that does love you in your life, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, that means that the other person won. This is the way I feel like I look at it, and I'm not going to let them win. Well, and then and then you have, you know, especially a kid, and you're talking about a kid, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's like, dude, there's nothing I won't do for my kid. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there for my kid, and I will do anything for her. Mm-hmm. So I can't lose for her. Mm. I have to win for her.
Do you feel like I have found, like, through my suffering, through my rock bottoms, because I've had many in my mm-hmm. life, I have news for you. This is probably not your last rock bottom.
No.
But
no.
Do you feel like I have found a certain peace in knowing that, like, no matter what, I'm going to be okay? And that mm-hmm. is because of my belief in God, and that is because of the things that I do every day. But it's also because I've fucking been through hell.
No.
And you've been through hell. And, like, now I have that confidence. Like, are you grateful? Have you gotten to the place where you're grateful and you can feel, like, because shit, like, life is life, right? Life is always going to fucking knock us down. It's never going to be perfect. We're never going to be like this. It's always going to be like this.
Never.
But do you feel a certain, like, inner, like, oh, nothing is going to fuck with me like that anymore? Do you feel that?
I mean, I agree with you. Like, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be the last time, you know, shit happens, because mm-hmm. life is life. And life isn't supposed to be just a fucking easy...
Right, rainbows and unicorns.
Exactly.
It'd be great if it was.
But. Yeah, but then that wouldn't be life.
Mm. So, we wouldn't appreciate the rainbows.
Well, you won't appreciate the good times. Mm-hmm. So if everything's good, then how are you going to just sit there and appreciate mm-hmm. anything when it's always good? Mm-hmm. You have no, you know, adversity. Mm-hmm. So going through, you know, having adversity in life and getting over that, I feel like that's what builds you as a person. And mm-hmm. so the next time, you know, you are eating a shit sandwich, you can mm-hmm. just go, hey, been here before.
Yep.
I know what this tastes like.
And you're just like, all right,
this too will pass. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this. And if you just keep trying to stay positive, because the more you start having all these negative, which I've been there so many times, you just sit there and just have negative thought, just eat you alive. And then the more negativity and shit you're putting out there or thinking, mm-hmm. I feel like the more shit happens to you, like bad stuff. But the more you're like, dude, I'm going to get past this. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to keep thinking good thoughts. I'm going to keep doing mm-hmm. good shit. Yeah. I'm going to keep mm-hmm. taking care of myself, and I'm going to keep pushing on. Mm-hmm. And then little by little, you keep having these small wins,
mm-hmm.
and then that turns to a big victory mm-hmm. at the end. And that's something I'm learning more each day and trying to, you know, push myself through.
Yeah.
And there are times, like, I do this all the time because we're only human. You're going to have those lows. It's going to hit you. Like, I have days I wake up and I'm just like, dude, I don't want to fucking be here no more. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I doing? Like, this mm-hmm. just, everything is just miserable. Like, fuck life, fuck all this. Mm. And then I'm like, quit being such a bitch and moaning. Like, dude, go do something. Go outside.
Don't talk to yourself like that. I just want to give him a hug. Oh, my God.
Well, like, what else is like, I'll go for even like a walk. Like, I'll go to the beach, go for a walk, mm-hmm. and like,
get outside.
Yep. Get in the sun. I don't know, get some vitamin D, you know?
So I have this thing I call my habit tracker, right? So there are these, like we talked about, what are the things that you do that you really feel like make a difference? So, like, for me, my habit tracker is like, okay, I'm going to pray, I'm going to journal, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to spend time outside. I do my cold plunge. I actually have a lot of habits now that I try to do every day. But it started with, like, okay, I'm going to be outside, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to journal, and I'm going to pray. Like, those are the four things. Like, okay, if I do these things every fucking day mm-hmm. and I commit to care for myself enough, to love myself enough, to do these things, my life gets better as a result. Like, my view of life, my peace, my joy, my presence, my ability to deal with the shit mm-hmm. gets so much better. So yours is gym and pray. Is there anything else that, like, if you know, like, you know, oh my God, shit's hitting the fan, I need to fucking... Okay, I need to pray. I need to like, what are the, like, are, is there anything else that you really feel like?
Calling.
Mm.
Yeah.
So then,
yeah. Call.
I should add that one. I should talk to someone every day. That's a good one. Mm.
My big
check-ins.
One of my things is I check in with my dad every day. So that's
I love that.
Mr. Wright.
Yeah. Yes.
I call
that's
him.
Great.
And he gives me advice.
Wealth and knowledge.
And, you know, he vents to me about stuff that's going on with him. Mm. And we kind of go back and forth. And we've always done that for many, many years. Even when I was stationed overseas, we'd always try to call each other.
That's awesome.
And that's helped me a lot is, you know, if I can hear my dad's voice and I'm blessed to, you know, still have my dad. And I know there's plenty of people that probably, you know, that don't. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just being able to hear his voice and just talk to him and get some good advice from him. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's like, okay. And it really helps and gets awesome. Me through.
That's good.
You,
I love
you
that.
Know what I'm seeing a lot of from you is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
I'm seeing a lot of acceptance. Like you're just accepting.
Mm-hmm.
You're not bitching and complaining, mm-hmm. and not that you ever did, but
oh, I did plenty.
Right?
But,
we all.
But,
I'll say yeah.
Here in this session on this podcast, mm-hmm. you. In a very mature manner with some character assassination, just a little bit. You really
she deserved it. Yeah.
You, it seems like you've accepted a good amount of this. Mm. And part of that acceptance is we opened with it. You drove 24 hours to go see your daughter, like yeah. in total there and back because she wasn't willing to meet you halfway. Yeah. A lot of people, I feel like, would have stopped and fought it. And fought. You said,
victim.
You know what?
Oh, this is...
F it.
Yeah.
My mm-hmm. Seeing my daughter is more important. Yeah. Like, I'm powerless over how she is going to mm-hmm. act, my yeah. ex. I want to see my daughter. I need to be a father in her life. Mm. And you did it.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, dude.
No,
you should
so
hold
beautiful.
Your head up very high.
Seriously. Yeah.
Well, I know at the end of the day, and I've had plenty of people tell me this, and that's something I keep telling myself is like, dude, I'm not a bad dad. I know I'm a good dad.
Yes.
I'm going to mm-hmm. continue to be a good dad, and mm-hmm. I'm going to do everything I can to now.
Yes.
I don't have this, you know, this anchor holding me down anymore. And because I was never going to go anywhere. Like being with her was never going to go anywhere. So, now I can go do something to benefit my life, build a future for myself, build a future for my daughter. And then at the end of the day, like we discussed earlier about, you know, kids grow up and then one day they're going to realize, yep. hey, dad's not a bad guy.
The truth comes out.
So the truth will come out and, you know, might not be today, might not be tomorrow, could be a few years from now. But mm-hmm. I know one day my daughter's going to look back and be like, you know what, dad wasn't all these things that I've been told. And my dad is a good guy.
You just keep showing up.
That's all you got to do.
I got to tell you, you just keep showing up. And listen, man, I am like cheering for you. I am in your corner. I just met you like an hour ago, but I'm on Team Josh.
I appreciate
and
it.
And I don't, I'm not going to push you, but I just want you to know if you ever want to go to a big church, you're more than welcome to come with my family and I.
I'd love to.
Like, I love Park Ridge. Yeah. It's a beautiful place, lots of broken people, but.
Yeah, I'm not completely against it. I would definitely do it. I just, you know, I think it's just trying to find the right one.
Yeah.
And the right people just to be around.
Well, you're doing all the right things. I'm so glad that you came on the
I can't thank
you
all enough.
Thank
this
you
is
so
this
much.
Has been so much
thanks
fun.
Thanks for opening up. Thanks
yeah.
for being vulnerable.
I love this.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you for being.
Thank y'all.
Thank yeah. you so much, and best of luck.
Yes.
You know, going back into the
Navy. I'm going to be checking in. I'm going to be like, Kevin, how is he? Tell me.
Don't you feel so safe with, like, him on the front line fighting
yeah,
for us and protecting our
yes. Also, thank
country.
You for your service.
Yes, thank
appreciate
you for your service.
Yes.
For your service. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even though your taxpayer dollars went to a bunch of dumb shit.
All right, Josh. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.